Thanks for downloading this podcast. It's for personal use only and must not be rebroadcast, reproduced, or used in any form without permission.
Tell your friends they can get their own copy by searching iTunes for Radio Le Mans or visiting radiolemans.com.
Checkered flag ends the race, but not the race talk. Have your say. Ask the experts. Make your point. Post-race tech. The end of the race is only the beginning.
It's Michelin Post Race Tech for the Michelin Endurance Challenge weekend. What a 6-hour encounter at Michelin Raceway at Road Atlanta. Oh, my goodness me. Jeremy Shaw still with me in the Hagerty Global Broadcast Centre. Shea Adam trying to wrangle a few interviews through this. Jeremy, as we leave our colleagues on IMSA TV. Jeremy, just the rest of the points there that we didn't get to in the race show, please.
I think it was just GTD, wasn't
correct,
it, that we
yes.
didn't get to. So Mario Farbacher and Matt McMurray in the number 86 Meyer Shank racing with Kerberger Journey, and they will now have a very, very handy lead. They came here tied in points with Jack Hawksworth. They will leave here with 150 points. Up into second place now will be Aaron Tielitz, in actual fact, Ooh. In Canberra. He's had two different cars. He'll be a 138. And then Jack Hawksworth, who is his Tielitz's regular season co-driver now, on 136. And then the car with which Aaron Tielitz drove today, number 12 car, Townsend Bell and Frankie Montecalvo, they will have 134, as will Ryan Hardwick and Patrick Long in the Wright Motorsports Porsche.
Let's take some questions then. Hashtag Michelin PRT at IMSA Radio. We'll start with Benny Carrillo. Benny, thanks for tweeting in. He said, a lot of incidents and penalties we've seen today. Do you think that the teams aren't getting enough practice, or the teams just need some time to rest? That's been pretty fast and furious, hasn't it? He said, I do love the racing, but some of the penalties, particularly the ones that were assessed for pit lane infractions, were just silly on the team's point. The point is, Jeremy, I think, and I'd take what Benny's saying there here on Michelin Post Race Tech, but we said in the Porsche Keys to the Race, it is so tight that everybody's looking for the tiniest of tiny advantages. And when you have some, what do we have, 2 hours, 45 minutes of green flag racing in the middle of that race, then, you know, it's tiny margins, and making mistakes is going to be part of that because people are pushing the envelope.
That's exactly right. I mean, you know, any advantage you can gain anywhere, you have to go for it pretty much. But of course, if you do make a mistake, if you do overset that limit, then it can be costly, and then you kind of look silly, I suppose. But, you know, that's how tight it is out there.
As far as the stuff that's happened on the track, and Ian McCarthy makes the point as well, but a lack of patience from GPI drivers led to some of the incidents today. So many side-by-side GT battles, but there seemed to be a lot more respect between the GTD and the GT Le Mans drivers. I felt that many backed out of what were potentially silly dives down the inside. DPI, not so much. Again, you know, it's the sort of thing we talk about. You've got to have a bit of patience, otherwise you could end your race early. And we're going to leave Shea, by the way, to try and wrangle up some interviews at the moment. I'll bring her in a sec if we can get anything. But I think, Jeremy, that's a fair point, though, isn't it? That what I would say in response to that is that the drivers at the front of the field tend to be either works or pro drivers, and therefore they have really got the thumb under the chin a little bit, and every half second or second that they lose through traffic is going to be potentially an issue for them later on. And maybe that's why they push a little bit harder, Jeremy. Oh, just lost Jeremy for a moment. You muted your mic, Jeremy.
Sorry, yes, I have, because I was having a peanut.
Sorry, Jeremy.
My apologies. The problem there is that there's such a performance differential between the DPI cars and the GT cars. Not so much between GTLM and GTD, but a big gap between DPI cars and everybody else out there. So, you know, it's that patience versus reward that you talked about in the Michelin pre-game show, because you try not to lose all that time through the S's. That's where you lose the vast majority of time if you're stuck behind another car, and that's where you've got to be really, really patient. And you know, it's so competitive now that those sort of incidents are going to happen.
Yeah.
There's a lot more of those incidents now, not because the drivers are any worse, but because it is more competitive and they're trying to get that advantage.
Yeah, and the gaps. I mean, you know, okay, we had a late race caution that brought the field back together. We didn't really need the late race caution to pull any of the classes back together, Jeremy. They were all pretty close anyway. And through that 2 hour 45 minutes, depending on what tyres, where people were, where they were in their stint, you know, there was an ebb and flow to the race that I really, really enjoyed. This is, I think, possibly a last one on this sort of area. From Right Turn Lover in Switzerland, hello RTL. Should incident responsibility be penalised more heavily? Sounds as if DPI drivers need a bit more of a learning trigger not to spoil other people's day. That's always, isn't it, Jeremy, a difficult one, because the punishment has got to fit the crime, but the punishment has got to be commensurate with the offence, not what the offence has caused. I often see people shouting and screaming a lot because somebody gets pushed into a wall, whereby if somebody gets hit just as hard and they get pushed sideways and lose a position, it doesn't get penalised. And you've got to be consistent here, and that's what the drivers and the teams would want, although I can understand somebody, and I think I mentioned it in commentary, that says, right, well, hang on a second. Early on in the race, this guy ruined my race, and there he is leading the class, the race, etc. I can understand the frustrations there as well. It's a tough balancing act for the race officials.
Well, it really is. And, you know, I guess the moral of the story is, if you're going to make a mistake, obviously make it early in the race rather than late on. I mean, number 7 car had 2 penalties right off the bat. Number 31 car had 1 right off the bat, another one later on, and he was able to come back from both of them to finish on the podium. And the number 7 car, of course, won the race. But again, you know, the number 7 penalties, they were kind of procedural penalties, whereas the number 31 penalties were for driver conduct, let's put it broadly. Incident responsibility for both of them.
Good point.
You know, should there be more of a penalty for those? You know, you just got to go with the, you just play by the rules you're given and you get on with it. I don't really see much point in changing that, to be honest.
I'm very much indebted to Alan Prosser, by the way. The Helicam apparently was a Cessna aeroplane that was up the whole race, and he's managed to find the flight path of it, which has traced a nice green circle right around Road Atlanta. Thanks for that, Alan.
It must have been that. I tell you what, John, I wondered about that when we
saw a wing.
Well, no, I never saw a wing, but when we saw the replay of that accident at the end of the race, where there was one sort of perspective from it when it was just about to happen, and then it cut away for a split second, and then we saw the aftermath, effectively, and I thought there were two completely different angles, and I thought it was odd at the time, I couldn't figure out, so thank you, that explains it.
Yes, absolutely, it was a little Cessna cruising around. Tom Firth on Facebook at the Radio Show Limited Listeners Collective said, what do you guys think teams will be able to take forward from this petit performance to the full Motul Petit Le Mans? Will anything that they've learned here be of particular value, or have the teams got so much data here at Road Atlanta over the years that quite frankly it won't make any difference? I think they will have learned stuff from this year, and I'll ask Jeremy about that. Also wondering if the curbs had been repainted or were they different from previous years. She, you had a walk around the track, so were they different curbs or just repainted?
Both, actually. There was different paint on the curbs, particularly through turn one, through some of the lower curbs, because they had motorcycle racing here not very long ago.
Right.
So the paint that they laid down actually had sand in it to try and make it a bit grippier. In terms of the curbs, though, I tend to think of curbs as traditionally being like big slabs that are overlaying with one another.
Yeah.
The curbs around Road Atlanta are more like peaks and valleys. There's not so much of a slab feel to it, but there's more of just big blocks of concrete that run together.
Okay, interesting. Jeremy, anytime you're at a racetrack, you'll try and learn something, and any data surely is good data. It's close enough in the year to be appropriate for Motul Petit-Le-Mans from the guys that were there today, and that there have been one or two changes to the track, as we've just heard. To I think the tyres perhaps have changed compound since last year as well for the non-GT Le Mans classes. So, yes, surely people have learned something.
No question. Yes, they will. And you know, they'll now be much better prepared going into Petit Le Mans than they would have been otherwise. So, yes, you're always gaining when you're out on a racetrack, and you're only a month away. And if there's been a gap in the schedule now, this would be a good opportunity for some of the teams to go testing. Well, they've got a test session thrown in with a six-hour race as well.
Neil Charlesworth asking, is it about time IMSA looked into using a virtual safety car, Code 60 or whatever you want to call it? We've discussed this before. I'm a big advocate of Code 60, virtual safety car, other people call it like Formula One, for the simple reason that you neutralise the race just as quick as putting out a safety car, sometimes even quicker. You don't have to worry about packing the cars up behind a safety car, which tends to mean that you can get the pit lane open quicker, even for multiple classes, and you get back to green quicker because you don't have to wait to get across a start finish line and get the pace car, the safety car, out of the way to do it. Now, there are reasons in America particularly why I'm told that having a safety car and packing everybody up together and then having a couple of minutes before cars come through is more acceptable for workers being over the wall than just having a constant stream of cars going past, even if it is only at 60 k's an hour. And I see both sides of that argument. I still fall, if I'm honest, on the Code 60 side of things because you lose less laps of racing. But if you honestly believe that there's a safety aspect for the volunteer workers at the side of the track, I think you've got to err on the side of safety. And if that's what the American circuits and the American series say, then that's the way it is. We've discussed this before, Jeremy. And yes, it sometimes can be frustrating, particularly when you have to go through all the motions of mitigating having the safety car out in the first place, which of course Code 60 doesn't need, but that you have to do if you're going to put the safety car out in the first place. That is the consequences of putting the safety car out there. You can't just put a safety car out for potentially a lap and pack the field up and then disadvantage half the classes.
Look, one of the great things about motor racing is the fact that there's different series, different races, different rules, different cars. If you want to watch a Code 60, go to Europe.
Yeah.
If you want to have safety cars, come to the USA. It's as simple as that, quite frankly. It's just down to, you know, that's the way things are run over here. That's the way things are run in Europe. Personally, I much prefer this system. I've been based in North America now for 35 years.
Why?
And I love this system because it brings the racing back together again. Why are we here? We're here to entertain the fans.
Yeah.
Yes, the teams love it. The drivers love to drive the cars. But ultimately, we're here to entertain the fans. And this, to me, the Code 60 thing or whatever they call it, I hate it.
Virtual safety car.
Absolutely hate it.
Why?
Hate it. Because it
just neutralizes the race, Jeremy, and nobody loses and nobody benefits. So it just neutralizes the race.
But if it was a boring race before, it continues to be a boring race afterwards. What this does, it brings the racing back to the fans again. I love it. I'm going to go for this every single time. I mean, I'm not trying to be disparaging it any way at all. It's just the fact that, you know, it's just two different series run their rules in different ways. I'm not going to say one is better than the other. What I will say is I prefer this system.
Even though it takes more time out of the racing, unquestionably, whatever else you think about it, it takes more race laps out to deploy, sort out, reset, wave by, reset the field again. It always takes more time, so you lose more racing laps under a safety car than you would under the other system.
You might lose two or three laps more. You're absolutely right. But for me, I'd much rather have a closer motor race than not lose a couple of laps of racing, absolutely, particularly in long distance.
See, if it was just the laps, I wouldn't mind it so much.
See, but when I hate the system. You know, I hate the system at Le Mans. I despise it.
Three safety cars?
Yeah, hate it. Hate it. It ruins a race every single year.
Yeah, but I would always say for that, Jeremy, that I would never deploy a safety car at Le Mans. I would only ever do a virtual safety car.
Right.
Because then it wouldn't ruin the race. The thing that they don't do at Le Mans that they should do, if you're going to deploy safety cars and you need to deploy safety cars, by all means, it's a long track, deploy three safety cars. But before you go back to green, pull the other two safety car out and pack everybody out back behind one. If that's the way you're going to do it, that's the way you should do it. I have no doubt about that. But at Le Mans, you should never need to put a safety car out, same as you never need to put a safety car out at the Nürburgring, and they never do. My issue with the safety car, from what you've said, and if it is only losing two or three more laps, I wouldn't mind it so much. The problem is, when it's a timed race, it can be 10 or 15 minutes that you lose in terms of racing. So you actually lose a lot more racing laps than you sit behind the safety car unnecessarily, whilst everything has to be, or sorry, necessarily, while everything is shuffled back to mitigate multi-class racing. It doesn't matter in single-class racing. I don't mind safety cars in single-class racing, because it doesn't take as long to get back to green. But by mitigating the effect on multi-class racing with a safety car, you have to then do everything else to try and shuffle everybody back around. And that actually is what takes the time. So
yes, it does. But again, you're only going to lose two or three laps. And in the final half hour of the race over here, then we have the short yellows. You don't go through all that.
That's true.
Procedures. So
I think was a good take up by IMSA. That was very good take up by IMSA to do that.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Let's have a look at one more. Graham Rees said, I've been watching, these are some more, just more comments than anything else. And I don't think anybody's going to argue with this. Graham Reed says, I've been watching ELMS from the early 2000s during the lockdown, Dysons versus Audis, etc., etc. And frankly, this series is still right up there for entertainment, much of what we were just seeing as well. And what else did I see there that somebody had posted about the racing itself? Very good indeed that you have tweeted in. Where's I've lost me feed now? My apologies. It's late. There we are.
Yes.
Perfect date, time and day in the UK to enjoy it, says Phil. Pretty much a good substitute for the ELMS WEC. Apart from not getting a pint at the White Horse just down the road from Silverstone. Thanks for the coverage once again. Top that, I suppose, is what we're going to say. Shea, Adam, your thoughts on that race today. All three out of the four classes had plenty of racing. The fourth class, where we saw Simon Trummer give us something to be amazed about with that fast lap in LMP2. Your thoughts on the 6 hours, please.
I'm stunned, to be honest, of everything that we saw. I'm over the moon happy for Bruno Spengler, Simon Trummer, Shinya Mashimi, and of course, Scott Huffaker, who all take their first wins in IMSA competition. Think about that. Simon has run full season for a couple of years now, and he gets his first win in his second start of the year after the long pause. So that's a really remarkable thing, and going in and setting the fast lap. Just a quick point. I'm just hearing from the podium that the 86 was on slight fuel save. They actually ran out of fuel on the cooling down lap after all that caution. So despite what people were telling me from the pit wall, they were not comfortable with where they were, and the battle between Plongy and Sellers that never went away, that was potentially for the race win overall.
Wow. Yeah, that was 7 seconds less in the pit lane, 7 seconds fewer spent in the pit lane. Had to be something. And the only thing I could think of was fuel. Jeremy, we are waiting for confirmation of the next dates for IMSA. It should be, where should we be next? Mid-Ohio next, isn't it? The next one at the end of September. We've heard this afternoon in other motorsport news that IndyCar are now going to be there next weekend, which doesn't give people a lot of time to get organised. What I haven't heard is whether there'll be a crowd or not. If not, then we've got Petit Le Mans not too far away, and frankly, a few more cars and another 4 hours. It's not exactly going to make it that a worse spectacle at Motul Petit Le Mans, is it?
No, it's going to be great. I mean, gosh, if we can replicate this race next month here, that'd be fantastic. And don't forget, of course, in between those two events, we've got the Charlotte Roval visit, haven't we?
Oh yes, that's for Mission Pilot Challenge only.
Exactly.
Is that
and GT, isn't it?
GTLM and GTD.
Yeah,
right.
GTD,
okay.
Yeah.
All right. So it's another.
So no prototypes there, but.
So it's another GT weekend. Race. That's the replacement for the Lime Rock GT weekend. Then yes. Yep. Okay, that makes perfect sense. Ah. Thank you very much to everyone who's taken part in this. Tim Gray has been on duty all day today. Tim, roll the long out, please, for the 45 seconds. I can't even be bothered to reach over to my computer and send you a note at the moment. Thank you to Jeremy and Cher who've joined me, to you who have tweeted and been involved with this. Not a bad way to get through a Saturday. But it's not the end of IMSA Radio and IMSA TV. Two more challenge races on Sunday and then the longer four-hour format of Michelin Pilot Challenge. It's got a lot to live up to. But you know what? I have a strong suspicion that it might just do that. It really might. Wherever you are in the world, thanks for tuning in to IMSA Radio RS2. We'll be back tomorrow. Join us then for more from the Michelin Endurance Challenge weekend. Whatever you're doing this afternoon or this evening, have a good Saturday and we'll see you tomorrow. Good night, God bless.
This program is a Radio Show Limited production.
Tell your friends there's more at RadioLeMans.com.